This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora tātou and welcome along to Aratoi On Air. This is your fortnightly digest of what's happening in the arts and culture scene in and around Otipoti Dunedin with me, your host Sean Norling, and my colleagues Nick Tipper and Amy Tawa, creative advisors at the DCC's Creative Partnerships Aratoi Arts and Culture Team. Kia ora, Nick.
Kia ora, and kia ora koutou e whakaroko ana ki tēnei radio show. Yeah, nice to be here again. Second fortnight in a row.
Thank you to Otago Access Radio for lovingly hosting us this program every fortnight at midday on Thursdays and subsequent Fridays at 5 p.m. Our mission really is to put a spotlight to amplify arts and culture in Dunedin. I think we're doing okay. Third season.
Two, three.
Would you look at that?
If you're looking at it on Pirate Bay, you'd be looking for 2-3.
Yeah, numerologists might have something to say about it. I don't know. 2-3. Interesting. Yeah.
But we're not alone here today, are we, Sean?
No, we've got a couple of really cool chats lined up for you this afternoon. We'll be playing a chat that you, Nick, had with a lovely young person in the Otipoti music scene. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of talking to Kara Wallace at the end of last week. And so we'd be playing that corridor that we had, which we go into all sorts of areas with that discussion, talking about Kara's earlier work, their more recent work, their collaboration with Adelaide Dunn, and also potentially an upcoming album that they're working on, which is all very, very exciting. And, of course, one of the reasons for talking to them in the first place is one of their tracks is going to be included on the upcoming Otipoti Hou compilation.
So good. Really looking forward to hearing that. Really enjoying this music bed at the moment. Just changed out on me. But our second chat is with Stephen Stedman, who works down there at the University of Otago's School of Performing Arts. He can be found generally behind a different set of sliders, mixing bands, mixing students of the programs down there, music students of the programs down there. And he's come in the flesh today, just to have a bit of a chat about the kaupapa of the space, the history of the space. Maybe we'll dig into what he's been up to on his own kind of level, that kind of thing. Kia ora, Stephen.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you in the studio, and it's been so nice to work with you. Nick just mentioned the Otipoti Hou project, which is a Youth Māori Pacifica music compilation project that we're building towards, releasing on May 22nd this year. I have to say, you've played a really pivotal and vital role in bringing that project into the real world. The space itself and the suite of studios you've got happening down at the School of Performing Arts. Some people think the university is a little bit kind of scary, a little bit intimidating to get through the doors and engage with some of the stuff happening down there. But in my experience, walking through the doors of that beautiful building down there and engaging you on the Otipoti Hou project was a real pleasure. Tell me why recording youth Māori and Pacifica musicians locally is important to you.
I'm going to pick up on something you said there about the uni being a bit scary and perhaps seeming like its own little enclave.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, part of the studio's role is to be one of the portals of the university that connects with the community, and works with the community. In terms of supporting the project, I mean, that for us was a fairly simple decision, because it is, it represents our community, the place that we live. And it's a way of shining a light on some of that. I guess that's how we see some of our role. Obviously, we've got a responsibility to a lot of undergraduates who are completing degrees and things like that. So what we try to do is that if we've got any spare capacity, we try to fit that into sort of community-focused projects that will bring voices into the real, if you like, you know.
Yeah, and yeah. There seems to be like an underlying strategy of, engaging perhaps future students of the university. You have a lot of, I know you're involved with the Play It Strange programs and things like that. Mm. So is there a deliberate strategy to engage new upcoming emerging music makers in Dunedin?
Yes, I would say in all honesty, we're definitely wanting to engage with people. We're wanting to demonstrate that there is a pathway into the arts, that the arts have value, that there is employment for people with arts degrees. We're developing people to be problem solvers and quick thinkers and creative thinkers, coming up with new ideas, being able to think on your feet, that kind of thing. So I think performance and music, and we know that music gives people a tremendous sense of well-being as well. So we've got to touch on that too. So, yeah, there's so many good things that music does for people, that sharing that with young people and saying yes and saying you've got permission to do this stuff.
Love it. The facilities themselves are incredibly luxe, world-class. How can you give us a bit of a rundown about how it came to be that?
How did we get here?
Yeah, how did we get here? How did we end up with such a gorgeous facility there on campus?
Well, I suppose it's been a really, and this is just my view of it, obviously. It's not an official university view of it, so this is my personal perspective, is that it's been a journey over many, many years with many different staff. And Music at Otago have been involved in, starting back with four-track recorders and the kind of Music Concrete and Lil Byrne type inspired experimental noise music that came from the classical Western art realm. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the beginning of that, and then experimenting with MIDI for composition and all of that kind of thing. So it's sort of got its foundations in composition, I suppose, and then a bit of a focus into music technology with the arrival of MIDI and being able to compose music and have all of these crazy machines play it back for you and record it. And starting with a studio in the basement of Marama Hall, for example, just starting with something really, really simple. Then in around 2000, when the Contemporary Music Program came along, that needed somewhere to operate. And so the university leased some space in the Radio New Zealand 4ZB building on Albany Street. Initially just to use that big studio that we'd all sort of longingly looked at and wondered,
I remember,
how to get in there. So they needed somewhere to house that stuff so that people could play noisy music without disturbing the rest of campus, and that was available. So we sort of got a foothold in there, and we had a nice big room that sounded incredible. And then we just started putting more and more equipment in there. So we kind of created this precedent, I suppose, for having a studio, demonstrating the value of it, the cool things that you could do with it. That building then became economically unviable. People will have heard the word asbestos when you've got a building, and that building was particularly full of it because of the way the roof was constructed. So it wasn't so much a hazard inside the building as it was inside the roof, and the roof was deteriorating at a great rate. So the university opted to replace that building, and that's a decision that we're really, really pleased with. So we've ended up, we thought, well, if we're going to do that, we want enough space to record the DSO, maybe not the whole orchestra all at once, but, something that's big enough to do large small orchestras, large chamber work, that kind of thing. And something that would be suitable for all kinds of work, you know, whether it's Western art, classical, or rock, or heavy metal, or reggae, or choirs, or Pacifica groups, you know, taiko drumming, gamelan. So, yeah, we wanted to create a versatile space. Yeah.
I love it. You've had a pretty long history with the campus environment. I remember seeing you in photographs at Radio 1 and things like that. You're a musician yourself.
Yeah.
You stuck around.
Yeah. I have sort of stuck around. I've been really lucky. You know, I've had people who have pointed me at cool things that I've wanted to do. I'm really fortunate to work in music as a musician. I'm not necessarily playing music all day. In fact, one of the hazards of working in the kind of support roles is that it becomes more difficult to find time to pick up the guitar and play a silly song, or a really cool one, maybe, hopefully. But, that early experience, I was at Radio 1 in about 91, 92. It was quite cool to be working at 91 and 91.
New numbers again.
Yeah. So that was, again, the same kind of drive and desire that I've always had to kind of help other people realize their music, as well as, you know, wanting to just be a participant in that process with them. I'm a very process-oriented person. I really enjoy the process of recording.
And I guess my observation of the local kind of music industry, for lack of a better word, is that it's kind of thin in Dunedin. And so, you know, if you do find yourself in a kind of support position within the industry, it becomes quite vital to making things happen around it. There's not a huge pool of people to pull from.
Well, it's an economically fragile activity.
Yeah. And so it just means your mahi becomes all that more kind of poignant and important just because of the lack of infrastructure.
I think, though, that here's the thing, is that musicians aren't necessarily making a ton of money when they go out and play. In fact, they've probably invested a whole lot more than they're going to recoup from any particular gigs. But they're providing a whole lot of other value for our community at the same time. You know, the music events in Dunedin encourage people to come and visit the city, for example.
Yeah,
you know,
agree. What's on the horizon for Te Kurukuru Te Tui and the studios down there? Any cool projects or programs underway?
Well, there's kind of a golden rule in recording, is that you don't you don't talk about people's projects.
Your secret is safe with us and all of the listeners.
So there's an aspect of that. You want people to be able to launch their project on their own timeline and promote that. I can tell you that we've got we're just doing some mid semester assessments at the moment. We're looking forward to the later in the semester, and we're supporting our studios are really, really busy every day. Like we're doing, you know, drums and bass recordings most days of the week with our Musi 332. We talk in paper codes a lot. So that's music production at university. So we've got lots of people who are working on those sorts of projects every day. We know we've got some Play It Strange projects in the offing. We don't know what they are yet, but we do have that ongoing relationship with Play It Strange. We're working with student radio. We're trying to line up some more live to air, so we do use the studio for that quite a bit, where we're looking to live stream things on YouTube. We've got a pretty good camera set up in there. We've been developing that aspect of what we do for quite a while.
So trying to
create opportunities for local musicians as well. We know there's a big pool of people that we haven't worked with yet, so we're trying to figure out how to get them through the door.
If I'm a young musician, which I'm not, but if I was, how would I find out a little bit more information about the facilities and what's on offer down at
the easiest way is probably to jump on the interwebs and point at our website that's got some information on there. Also working, like, if you're young, do the Rock Quest and do apply to, you know, put your songs into Play It Strange. All of those sorts of things are really, really worthwhile ways to develop your craft. And a big shout out for the Amped Project as well. They're doing amazing work with young bands in town. And we work with high schools as well, so there's overlap there. So we end up with some of the Amped bands coming in because their music teachers bring them through for a day. So we're doing that kind of outreach with them as well.
So. Just reflecting on how that's developed so much since when I was younger and how inaccessible Albany Street was at that time. I remember we were fortunate enough to record there towards the end of my time at school, but I was kind of, very like, oh, wow, Albany Street.
And so was I.
And And Te Koro Koro, I think, in terms of the quality of the studio, the quality of the skill and the staff that are there is the same, but the fact that those pathways are becoming more available to younger musicians and people who are emerging, I think, is so wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's true. That issue that I spoke about at Albany Street was one of the reasons that we became a bit more closed off, was just because we had this hyper-vigilant health and safety thing in place around asbestos. We didn't want to take any risks. I'm very risk-averse. So it has been a pleasure to do that. Obviously, we've only got so many staff. We do as much as we can with the time we have available. And I have to do a shout out to Dr. Mike Holland and Richard. Hugh Harlow and Adelaide Dunn, my colleagues, who we work as a team pretty closely, and we have a wonderful relationship with some other people who come in and help us to put these things together. Yeah,
indeed, all legends in the game. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Stephen. We really appreciate it, really love your work and what you're up to down there on campus, and I look forward to seeing what comes out of those spaces soon.
Well, I'll just say I'm really looking forward to hearing that whole record. Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah,
so are we. Cheers, mate. We'll be back in a few ticks with that Kira Wallace interview.
Kia ora, everyone. You're here listening to Aratoi On Air. Today, I have a very special guest. Kira Wallace has joined us to have a kōrero about their recent track they've contributed towards the Otupotsiho compilation album, and also just to have a more broad chat about their practice in general and all things wonderful in our creative scene here in Otupotsi. So welcome, Kira.
Hello. So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
As I was just saying to Kira before we started recording, I think what I really enjoy about listening to your work is you can hear a really clear sonic progression over the years that you've been releasing work. How did you find that process of working with Adelaide?
I worked with Adelaide on a single I released last year called Your Surface Settles, and then some other bits and bobs with the uni and like Play It Strange. And yeah, it's just always been such a fulfilling process with Adelaide. They get me really well. And I think our musical influences align really well. And I think we both have an appreciation of like the sonic landscape that a song creates. And I guess, creating the context in which the song exists in. Like we set up a cymbal in a big stairwell and we're just hitting it with a stick. We use that at the end of seabeds to create this like swelling rain sound sort of thing. Very microphones. Mount Leary sort of influenced.
Who you've played with?
Yes. Yes, I always forget. But also I'm never going to shut up about it.
And you shouldn't. So you've worked, I was just looking through some of the producer notes, and the first five singles that you released were with Molly Devine, right?
Yes. I think I was 13 when I recorded those, and then maybe 14 when I recorded the last two. Molly was such an incubator for me, and like it was really important to have that sort of role model entering the music scene, and putting my stuff out there was really encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely.
To record in for the first time. And like, even though my music has changed so much since then and it sounds nothing like it, I think it's important to have them there still to show that music changes, and music is just a snapshot of a specific moment in time or feeling. And whether I'm 13 and discovering what metaphors are, I think it's important to hold on to those. Yeah. There was a point in time where that was the music I wanted to create, and I had people that loved my music back then, so it still serves a purpose.
Speaking of those first five tracks, April, I think, is the first song that really stuck in my mind of yours, which is interesting because I think that was the last one of those first ones with Molly that you released before you started working with different producers, I guess.
Yeah.
Worked with quite a range since then, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've worked with Abigail Nodson and at Roundhead with Alex Corbett and a whole lot. But I think it's nice to try different styles, and I'm finding that I'm craving to try work on my own stuff, produce on my own, and that's what my little demo banjo song / footpath cache was. Because I haven't released anything that I've produced myself. I've been learning at like high school and at uni in some papers for a while. So honing my skills, but it's still very scary releasing something that you've produced and you're somewhat new at producing. So it's hard to know when a song is done, I think, and how much more touching up you can do. I have maybe an album coming. It's coming so slow, but it's chugging along and I'm very excited for it.
A huge number of different people you've worked with. I've got a few names here. Mm-hmm. Jarvis Wallace.
Oh, it's my brother. He did the cover up for Celestial Lovers.
Debbie Lawson.
That's my mum.
Oh my gosh. It's a family affair. I love this. Yeah, Abby and Kala Knudsen.
Mm-hmm.
TJZ.
We did Song Hubs together. And that was when Leap Landing was born as a song. I was in a room with Abigail Knudsen, Kala Knudsen, and TJ. And yeah, we all co-wrote the song and produced it in one day.
Yeah, Alex Corbett at Roundhead.
Yes, that was awesome. Also really understood the vibe of what I was going for. Yeah, it was just awesome working in Roundhead. And it was in the downstairs studio.
And that was Lambs Aren't Waking Yet, that track. Yeah, yes. That was off the back of winning Play It Strange,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was. But cool. Yeah, it was very fun. We whipped out a mandolin and 8-year-old guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that just in the trove there at Roundhead? Or obviously more recently, cycling back to Adelaide and working at Te Quarter Quarter or Te Tui. And Craig Monk as well on violin.
Yes.
Beautiful. You were involved in Amped Project as well?
Yes, I have been since 2020. This will be my 6th or 7th year. Once I finished high school, I was involved as a crew member.
I imagine it's really easy for them to relate as well and you to be able to hopefully have some really helpful conversations and impart some advice.
Definitely, like being around in the music scene for like 6 years now, I guess. Yeah, I've made some connections with like lots of older musicians that have been really awesome and guiding. Also, being younger, I have that connection with the younger bands as well to sort of bridge the gap and see how everyone influences each other, and the older bands influence the younger bands, and then there's like the little ones that come to the gigs and then they start forming bands, and it's just a really, really cute ecosystem. Some of these bands are still in high school and it's just insane. Like Seek Help came 3rd in Rock Quest recently, and now the opening for the Foo Fighters, and it's just good
amazing.
On them.
That's so amazing, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot through the Rolling Stone kind of, and you had an article yourself in that, which is amazing.
I didn't know it was going to happen. I did like an interview for this In General Scene report on the all ages scene, and little bits of that interview became my own feature.
That must be a pretty cool feeling to see your name kind of pop up under that banner as well. And
yeah, it's insane.
A couple of the tracks you released last year have strong rural influences.
Mm.
Can you speak to that? Is that kind of your own life that's coming into that, or?
I think it's a big reflection of, I guess, the music I've been listening to. Like a lot of it's been becoming more country influenced. Like Frog is a big influence, big fan of Frog, this like alt country Greek folk band. There's no band that I've come across that sounds exactly like Frog. Also, my childhood has influenced my appreciation for nature and sort of more rural aspects of writing. Because like my grandma lived in Geraldine, which used to spend holidays at her place, and she had a huge garden and big old English house, and we'd have bonfires and whatnot. It was a really, really integral part to my childhood and very much formed who I am. Yeah, emulating that environment is something I do a lot in my songwriting, because I've always used those nature aspects to say something about human nature or mortality, I guess, big feelings boiled down into a comprehensible concept.
Moth-Eaten.
Yes.
A newer project.
Yeah.
Was last year the first year of Moth-Eaten?
I think, yes, it was. We started at the start of the year, or maybe end of the year before. It's a sort of shoegaze band that I'm in with 3 others, and we've been doing some gigs. It's a lot heavier to my acoustic stuff. I'm on electric guitar, and I've got pedals, but we've had a little hiatus to sort of reconfigure our sound, maybe leaning a little more country gaze, sort of like Wednesday or Shallow Water even, more country vibes. But still very heavy.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting. It's so different to what I usually play that it's a nice escape and like outlet, I guess.
Seems like maybe what you're saying with the new album that you're working on by yourself, that's maybe become more of a solo process than...
Yeah, I'm wanting to do most of it myself and just have like free roam of like I can add as many guitar layers as I want, and I can put banjo in every song, and I can do a million vocal layers, and it's like I can... do whatever I want, which is kind of freeing.
I guess given that you have this very solo endeavor now, I imagine it's a nice balance to the scales to have something that is way more collaborative.
Definitely. And yeah, writing in a band is such a different dynamic. And I'm also in another band called Dolly Possum, where, yeah, definitely more folky. A little bit heavy still. We're more closer to shallow water even, but still some like quiet folky songs. And I'm doing violin on it, guitar and a little bit of banjo. And yeah, we've got a drummer. So at first it was me and my friend Christian, just as a duo. We played a couple shows, but then we've got a drummer now, Caleb. And we're going to start recording an EP soon. We have about 8 songs. So that's also very exciting and also very different from my solo stuff and Moth Eden. So it's like a balance of all of my musical influences. And I'm very content with the dynamics at the moment.
What for you is kind of the most exciting or interesting thing about music in Otsipoti at the moment?
Yeah, I'm definitely very involved in the all ages scene that play at yours in Pioneer Hall. That, yeah, when I was still in high school, I used to go to lots of gigs. I think I'm sort of moving out of that as I get older and I make uni now, but it's still a very special part of Otsipoti and they deserve so much attention and they're awesome.
They
are. Go see a youth gig if you haven't already. Like so many of those bands formed at AMPT.
We're lucky enough to also have Seek Help on the compilation album, which is really cool. We also have a band, Crash Out, who I think formed for...
I was mentoring at that program.
As you'll find out, Crash Out are one of our contributing artists for the compilation album, and they formed for a To The Front workshop.
Yeah, it was like write a song in a day.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, super really lovely environment to be in because there was no pressure. Like, you didn't have to. You just like see what happens when those three people are in the room together. And yeah. Instruments and make sounds, and that was the brief, and that was really awesome environment. I think it's awesome they're on the compilation because it's so special to capture that kind of spontaneity that music can have. Three people in the room together, they just make something and then it becomes something that can be on a tangible thing forever.
The album that you're currently working on, have all the tracks been written for the album or still in the process?
No, still in the process. I think I have about maybe 5 or 6, I think. And I've fully recorded 3 of them. So it's all in pieces at the moment, but it's at some point it'll come together. But yeah, I just need to find that it's hard to prioritize your own stuff, I think, like when there's lots of other exciting projects going on in uni and whatnot. I think this year is the year.
Obviously, you've already said about banjo, many, many harmonies are both going to be aspects of it.
I love banjo so much. Got one from my friend's dad, and I need to play it more. But I recommend a banjo to anyone and everyone. You just play it, and it sounds like a banjo, no matter what you do.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. And even just open tunings are awesome.
Kira Wallace and their track Seabeds is going to be on the upcoming Otsipoti Ho compilation album, available on Bandcamp to listen to. Mm-hmm. There will be limited physical copies on vinyl and cassette. Thank you so much, Kira.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I love banjos too.
Great instrument.
Yeah, what a wonderful chat with Kira. Thanks, Kira, for your time there. And thank you to Stephen Steadman for popping in and having a chat to us about what's happening down there at Te Korokoro o Te Tui. This has been Aratoi On Air Season 2, Episode 3, with your hosts Nick Tepper and Sean Norling. We'll be back again in a fortnight's time with some lovely guests. Thanks to Otago Access Radio. If you want to reach out to the team at Creative Partnerships Aratoi, you can find us online. It's probably the way people do things in 2026. Our handles on Instagram and Facebook are at Aratoi Otipoti. Until next time,
this podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.